Hey guys, it's DJ Troublemaker back with you, and today I am pleased to be joined by Mr. Roy Samuelson. Mr. Samuelson is a voice actor, author, coach, and speaker. He has been in the entertainment industry for several decades, but is most well known to myself and a lot of my listeners for his work and expertise in the field of audio description. Mr. Samuelson, how are you doing today?
I am honored to be here after so many years. I'm feeling pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. Thank you for joining me. Would you please first just share a little bit about your personal story, such as where you call home and your personal background in entertainment and how you started out being immersed in our landscape of performing and visual arts?
Where I live is Los Angeles area, so I'm having a great time now that the weather has significantly changed. We've had quite a few challenges in the last few months, so it's nice to see some changes here on the weather front. For the performance that I do, I am a voice actor and I predominantly work in audio description, which is how blind and low vision people watch movies.
I hope you weren't impacted severely by the wildfires.
It's been unnerving, and the friends of mine that have lost homes have all had very many responses. They've completely lost their homes within minutes and sometimes hours. And everyone's got their own perspective, but I've noticed a significant change in the connection that people have with each other, even in the grocery stores. There's friendlier smiles, camaraderie. There's a lot of love being spread and people helping each other out. So I'm really happy to report that.
Who or what influenced your decision to pursue a career in the entertainment industry, especially in your chosen specific field?
When I was a kid, I went to a DJ at the radio. I was tasked to interview them, and one of the first things they taught me was how to adjust the mic so that the peas don't pop. You don't aim the mic right at your face, you angle it and twist it. I was fascinated by that. Gosh, I remember that experience. I still remember the joy, and I felt so cool. I felt like this is something that, wow, here's this person that does this amazing thing and they get to record their voice and it goes out on the radio. There was something really special about that connection that really touched me and still stays with me today.
I love that. Well, in my introduction statement, I mentioned how you are an expert in the area of audio description. While a portion of my audience knows exactly what that entails, I do have a portion that do not. Would you please just give us a brief glimpse into what audio description is?
You know, it's so funny you asked that. I might give you a little section from my book where I go off on what it is. Do I have your permission to do that?
Well, we were going to get into your book, but we'll do that.
So it's pretty simple. Audio description allows blind people to be able to watch movies. So it basically gives the visuals, kind of like a sports announcer on the radio giving the play-by-play. But in the world of audio description, it's also called video description or descriptive video or descriptive narration. A describer who might be the writer or narrator, or maybe it's both the writer and the narrator, or maybe it's the company, but not the production company nor the distributor, but a special other company gives the creation of a split track or a mixed track of a narrator, if the film or TV show even has it, depending on the distribution channel, like streaming, theatrical, broadcast, or physical, like Blu-ray or DVD, or downloadable to your iTunes or Google Play or even YouTube. With any of these, each of which offers varying levels of audio description, like an app or a TV or a cable box or a Chrome browser with a special plug-in, or with YouTube. Maybe it's a special YouTube video with audio description, but maybe the audio description's separately downloadable that syncs up and you listen to a narrator or a synth voice that sounds like a conversational robot. Or maybe it's a narrator that sounds like a synth voice, but you don't know whether the audio description is there or until you hear it, which could be a few minutes into the show. So you wait and wait and hope, and then you don't hear it, so you have to decide either to stop and complain or just put up with it. But who do you decide to complain to? Is it the local broadcast affiliate or the movie theater manager who's dealing with Karen's complaint about her unpopped popcorn kernel? Or do you contact one of the 47 plus streaming services by email, by message, Facebook, fax, tweet, by phone? But to find that phone, you have to hunt down a number, and you go to find that number through a press one, press three. Sorry, your call cannot be completed as dialed, or you dial a different number. And is that the main line? Another press four, press zero. Oh, good, a real person. It goes something like this. You say, yes, my speakers are working. No, audio description isn't closed captioning. Sure, I'll hold. Or better go through an accessibility web link buried so deep it feels like they don't want to talk to you. And even when the audio description is there and it's bad, what does that even mean? Is the writing indicating things the visuals don't have? Does the narrator of a suspenseful movie talk to you like you're a baby toddler? Does a kid's show have an uninterested adult narrating who sounds as tasteless as too long in the milk? Or is it just that synth voice like my friend Melody calls a puppet? Or even creepy like a horror monster made to describe the light-hearted comedy romance film to you? And who chose that voice and why? Does that voice even get in the way of your experience? And do you have to keep fiddling with the volume up and down and down and up to try to hear it, depending on what's going on in the background? Or maybe the production audio ducks out of the way so you can hear the narrator, but all the other audio disappears and it's jarring and it takes you out of the story. And does this work that is created for blind people actually include blind people in the process? Maybe.
I love that. That was awesome. And the funny thing is, I didn't mean to be disrespectful by laughing that entire time, but just the way you were going up and down and speeding up, I'm like, you know what you just reminded me of?
What's that?
Movie phone.
There it
my
is.
My friend Michael would get a kick out of that because he remembers that we used
Welcome
to call that
to movie phone.
Exactly. That was
awesome. It'd be funny because it's so funny. It's true, even though it's horrific.
It's ironic because I go to the movie theater all the time and they're probably tired of seeing my face. They know that, hey, we better make sure these headphones are working. If they're not, he's going to come and chew us out. I'm sure they've seen me enough that they probably know who I am. It's just funny. I'll tell them, may I please get a pair of description narration headphones? Because that's what they call them. And half the time, they give me the closed captioning ones. I'm like, nope, wrong ones. I need the headphones to tell you what's going on, not give you the closed captioning.
It's the cultural awareness of closed captioning and audio description starting to get up there a little bit. I'm thankful to report.
It is. We've been fighting here in our market in Salt Lake City area of Utah for several years. And we got the major chain here to help us out probably 5, 8, 10 years ago to start doing it. And it's really become more mainstream than anything. But if you go back even further, it's what is audio description? I have no idea what you're talking about. And now a lot of the movies just automatically come out with audio description, which is nice, but this still has its bugs. How did you become such a huge influence and massive proponent of audio description? And why is being a part of this field so important?
There's two parts to it, and I'll keep them both brief. The initial experience I had with audio description was an audition. And just like any other voiceover audition that I do, I prepare and I do the best and I try to show up and then I hope I get the job. But the actual experience of doing the audio description audition felt so compelling and exciting. And I was up all night, not only because I wanted to get the job, but because I had discovered this, oh, wow, there's this other area of voiceover that I had never explored before. A few months later, I had a dear friend of mine who we had really gotten incredibly close. He was like a brother to me. Sadly, he's passed away. And one of the things that he and I had connected on was this TV show. And we had really laughed and enjoyed talking about the characters in the first season. During the second season, he had completely lost his eyesight due to a procedure. And it was this really strange of experience I had of connection with him that felt like we weren't having all these speed bumps in the conversation. Because he was totally blind, he was able to use the audio description track so that our conversation was seamless. And we were able to still have that connection we had as friends and laugh about the show and say, oh my God, I can't believe that character did that. We didn't have to stop and figure out what had happened. The conversation was flowing and it was because of audio description. I instantly recognized how my experience of this friendship and the connection was still as strong as it could have been. That led to many more conversations with other blind audience members and some of the experiences they had from the context of a voice actor. I could see where there were some gaps happening. In other words, there are some areas where the voice was phoning it in, and it seemed like it was preventing that immersive experience I treasure so much when those scripts are brought to life outside of audio descriptions. Couldn't that be applied to audio description too?
Absolutely. And it's ironic because I've seen movies with my best friend and other friends in our neighborhood. They're like, okay, it's either going to be hit or miss whether Kevin gets audio description working for him and whether he enjoys it or not. My best friend loves it because he'll be sitting there with me and he'll see something. And he sees my reaction is, oh yeah, he's digging it. And then we're talking about it afterwards. And he's even said a few times, it's hard for me to comprehend what you miss out on. But understanding from your perspective, even though I can't really understand it, I get it because we get so much available to us with just our eyes that you don't. And it's a world of enlightenment when we have that available to us, as you said, through audio description.
Yeah.
As you alluded to a few minutes ago, you recently released a new book titled A Voice Actor's Guide to Audio Description Performance, Crafting Immersive Entertainment Experiences for Blind Audiences, in which you were also the voice narrator for it. Would you please just talk about how this book came to be and who would be the primary audience you intended it for and who would you hope it would reach?
That's great. I love this question, and I'm going to do my best to answer. Get me back on track in case I get.
That's okay. I go off track all the time.
So appreciate it. Thank you. One of the things that I think the book is meant for voice actors, that's the voice actor's guide, but there's this secret thing to it that there's something about the application for maybe film schools or the other areas about access, specifically for disabled people, that I think has some really powerful implications. That here's this microcosm, this very specific area for accessibility, for blind people, for audio description. And I see some parallels that are happening in other areas of accessibility. Using this as an example of some of the hurdles, I think a lot of people will be able to recognize some of the challenges and ways that people can overcome it. The book itself is intended to bring the perspective on audio description, besides just, oh, it's a thing you flip on or flip off. It's something that's annoying that you have to turn off. Sometimes I watch a film that has audio description and I feel I'm not really in the story. And then other times I'm fully in the story. And so trying to address those disparaging experiences that people have, the idea is that this book is transforming visual storytelling. To be able to have that inclusive experience is an immersive experience, and why it's so subtle and nuanced, and talking about the power that AD can have. And this is not a charity, it's a parity. And to be able to bring that message well.
If you could summarize your book and tell us what message you would want your readers to take away from it, what would that be?
Wow. That is a great question. To summarize my book, I believe that I want to explain why AD matters. There's also some places for how to improve it and who is responsible for delivering this high quality immersive experience and really breaking down the different departments, the writers of the audio description track itself, the casting decisions, the voice talents. Obviously, I'm biased toward that. The quality control, the editing, the mixing, all of these areas make audio description accessible, but the accessibility also includes that immersive experience. And I haven't seen that talked about before. That immersive AD is not just a checkbox, it's a critical part of the storytelling. Being able to talk about how these different departments work together and the skills required, the craft, the subtlety, and the emotional awareness built into these scripts. I find it fascinating, if you can't hear it in my passion here. But the big takeaway, I think, is for all AD professionals, whether it's the people that are involved in the script or even filmmakers and audiences, to really demand that thoughtfully crafted experience in AD, just as film and TV has that thoughtfully crafted expert contribution. Really focusing on the quality and expanding the opportunities, specifically for blind people who are involved in this work. To be able to use this not just as an accessibility tool, but something to really enhance the storytelling.
You did a good job. Before we got into that question, you had talked about where some people think that audio description is probably annoying. I'll be honest, my wife, bless her heart, she's now passed away,
I'm
but she
sorry, yeah.
used to give me a hard time because she didn't like listening to movies with me because she knew how critical it was for me to have the audio description playing so that I could enjoy the movie. But she didn't do it in a mean way. When you're completely sighted, as you well know, it may be a little bit annoying if someone's listening to that because it's distracting. But for those of us that rely on it, it helps us to enjoy. Just as we'll probably talk here in a few minutes about sporting events and having broadcasters telling us what's going on in the game. That's a critical aspect to our enjoyment of a sporting event, for example.
A
Well,
great point. Could I talk a little bit about that a little more from a perspective of someone who uses audio
absolutely.
description?
Absolutely.
My initial experience with audio description as an audience member is that there was a sense of distraction. I'm hearing what I'm seeing, and that overlap was overwhelming. But let's assume two things. First, it's the first time I've experienced it, and there is this initial overwhelm. After about 3 or 4 minutes, assuming the audio description is crafted in alignment with the film, I get it and I start to really get the story. I'm able to experience it in a way that is not working against the filmmaker's intent, but in conjunction. I'm very
Okay.
forgetful of names and will be reminded, oh, this is such and such a name. That repetition within the audio description track can help ground me and help me understand the story even better. And here's the other thing. There is a sense of agency as a sighted person watching a film to be able to turn it off. And I
Exactly.
think that there's also needs to be agency for a blind viewer or an audio description audience member who's watching a film or TV show to be able to turn it on.
Exactly. I love that. You and I both know how important audio is, not just in broadcasting and music, but in how we experience entertainment as blind audiences. In your book, you talk about how audio description can make film and TV more immersive. How do you think audio description can match the emotional power of music or radio storytelling?
I think when we think about podcasts and their popularity now, especially the storytelling ones, whether that's true to life stories or those extended news segments that are telling a story or the reenactments that are fictionalized. With podcasts and even audiobooks, you had mentioned Audible earlier, that these are places where we can fully immerse ourselves into a story, forget about the challenges of life, and be a part of something else. Have that awe experience of wonder, what's going to happen next, the anticipation and the joy. These are all part of storytelling that we all take for granted. One of the things I like to focus on in my book for the audio description script is how using the existing content, the music, the characters' dialogue, the noises that are happening, the stories that are being told. There is a way that the audio description script, the audio description performer, and the editing and the mixing can all augment that in a way that helps the story that's being told in a way that doesn't get in the way. And that's something that happens all the time when an audience member comes up and says, "Oh my gosh, I loved listening to the audio description on this story." And then they don't talk about my performance, they talk about what happened on screen visually. That is the success of an audio description performer and an audio description facility to be able to have that audience member completely forget that the audio description was there. That's a huge goal. And that's the level of immersion.
And not to take anything lightly, but I have to say, it's also the voice. For example, I get excited when I hear your voice because I know your voice right away. I mean, I've heard episodes of NCIS where you're doing the audio description. I've heard movies when you're doing the audio description. I'm like, that's Roy. Oh, yeah, I'm gonna love this. People are like, what is wrong with you? Oh, it's just my favorite guy doing audio description. It just makes me laugh how excited I get about it. When we were talking about radio storytelling, I carry a couple radio dramas, and it's a lot like the old time radio dramas from back in the 50s and the 60s. And one is Jim French's Imagination Theater, the other one is Blue Hour's Production Suspense. And I carry these shows every week. They don't have a lot of audio description, but you don't need it because it's all radio audio. They didn't have that even back in the 50s and 60s when you had those shows. You knew what was going on just by listening to it, and you were immersed into those programs. And I love that. That's another side geeky thing that I'm into. So,
I love it. Said, yeah, I see the parallels.
now, you alluded to this just a moment ago, but take us through the process of getting ready to describe a show or movie. Do you watch it first and then write out your own description, or is it provided for you? How does it all come about, and approximately how long does it take to complete one specific description project?
Yes, it's all over the map. Each audio description facility that I work with has their own approach. And then each project has its own opportunities and challenges. Sometimes I go into a studio and I'm directed. Other times I'm recording from home and I'm on my own. I'm given the audio description script and I use the video and or audio to help guide me for making sure my performance matches what's going on. So those are two completely diametrical opposite experiences. And in another experience, I'm almost engineering myself. There's a lot of double roles that I'm playing besides a performer. Specifically for different film and TV shows, there could be a script that is almost wall-to-wall audio description because there are so many visuals. I can't say the name of it, but there's another film that's coming out that had close to 700 cues audio description. When it comes to something like that, do I have access ahead of time? In most cases, I don't. There's a lot of restrictions that are put on the work that we do. And so a lot of it is not just cold reading in the sense of I haven't seen the script and I just have a few minutes to look it over. Sometimes it's ice cold reading where I'm literally doing it on the fly.
Oh, wow.
So thankfully, a lot of these companies understand if my intent of what I'm bringing to the words isn't matching what's happening on screen, then I can do it again. So there's a lot of different approaches. I'm only naming a handful of the gamut that this runs. It gets a little tricky to answer your question about how much time it takes. There could be an episode of television that could be 22 minutes long, or there could be a movie that's 3.5 hours long. And then within that, there might be a documentary that is just wall-to-wall dialogue, and there's almost no room to do anything except for introduce the next person that's about to speak. And so in that case, there's not really this method acting where it's like, what's my motivation to say this character's name who's about to speak? Let's make it clear. My intent is to present, okay, here's the next person who's talking and not get into the emotional aspect of it. I will make one exception to that. If I'm working on a documentary and there's a character that's going through an incredibly challenging story and they're pausing and they're maybe getting choked up or sharing something very intimate to their story, I'm not going to say their name with a big smile and confidence. I'm going to match their intensity. I'm going to find a way so that as an audio description audience member, you don't want to be beat over the head with this character name. And then all of a sudden, there's this really heart-wrenching story that's going to cause that uncanny valley of, wait, what's happening emotionally here? There's a lot of nuance within those names. I'm veering away from your question. With every script, the facilities have a good sense of how long the script is going to take. And if I'm recording on my own, it could be project-based where I have a few days. There's been times where I've gotten a script at 1 a.m. and it's due at 4 a.m. So it really fluctuates and everywhere in between.
All right. As a longtime sports fan, I know how frustrating it can be when play-by-play commentary misses key details. You mentioned in your book about how audio description also often falls short in a similar way. What are some of the biggest gaps in current audio description, and how can we push for better, more engaging descriptions?
I love this question. I do want to address a challenge that I think a lot of audiences are aware of. Some might not. And I'm going to call it the enemy of time. When it comes to sports games, there are so many things happening on the field. There literally is no way to explain every single event that's happening. The same thing with audio description in film or TV. If we say that a picture is worth 1,000 words, if there's 24 frames per second, that's 24,000 words to choose from every second of film. And then multiply that by a movie, then we're in the millions or multi-millions of words to choose from. And then we're not able to talk through the whole thing. We got to wait for other people to talk and
Exactly.
the characters say their dialogue. So it really is the enemy of time where it's condensed. As far as the advocacy goes, I started the ADNA, which is the Audio Description Network Alliance. It's also a podcast where we interview different experts in audio description, not just performers, but also writers, producers, quality control checks, and engineers. The intent behind that is to showcase the professionals doing this work and to help educate our AD audiences to understand the commitment and, like I had said earlier, the craft and the art that goes into this work and help refine some of the language. It's a lot easier for someone who's watching audio description to say, oh, I didn't like that voice. He reminded me of my ex-boyfriend. Or that voice, there was something about it that just didn't ring right. Or I really liked that voice. It worked. It helped me understand what was happening versus someone who says, oh, I hated the audio description. Did you hate the writing, or was it because you kept on having to adjust the volume to try to understand what was happening? Both of those experiences break the link. So helping our audiences understand there's many levels, there's many different departments that go into this work, and giving names to it seems to help just to be able to have something to dance off of. But I think one of the bigger things that I'm noticing happening a lot more often is that audiences are celebrating the good work. We're at a point now where audio description is becoming a lot more mainstream compared to before. It's still not at the place, but we're on that path now so that people don't have to advocate for more audio description 100% of the time. They're able to say, yeah, we're missing audio description on this track and we need it. And also, there's space to be able to say, I want to celebrate this audio description track. This is really good quality work, and it really meant a lot to me. Thank you for providing it. And that can go back to the facilities that create audio description. It's a positive reinforcement.
Exactly.
She gives positive reinforcement. And I think about healthy relationships, how they celebrate each other and say, it really meant a lot to me that you remembered I like no sugar in my coffee, or thank you for celebrating something that was special to me, or thanks for not wearing that shirt. That positive reinforcement can have a positive impact. I'm not going to suggest that audio description is perfect. We still need to call out when things need to be done better. But I am noticing the companies are responding to these positive things. I think I'm beating a dead horse now.
No, actually, it's ironic that you would bring that up because it goes into my next point. I know from a local perspective here in Utah, it's not necessarily audio description related, but it gives you an idea of how critical it is for my audience and I to have it available to us in order to be able to enjoy sporting events, plays, or musicals. But we've noticed when we attend local venues for sporting events specifically, there's an excessive delay between the broadcast and the actual live event. It unfortunately causes us to miss out on some of the action and thus diminishes our enjoyment of the game. In response to this issue, one of our local venues, the Delta Center, where the Utah Jazz play and the Utah Hockey Club play, they have come up with their own little device, kind of like a transistor radio, if you will. And ironically, I got to be the first one to use it here in the state of Utah just a few weeks ago. My family knows I grew up in St. Louis, so I'm a diehard St. Louis Cardinals fan and St. Louis Blues fan. And before my wife passed away, she had wanted to try to get me tickets for when the Blues would come because it would be my first time seeing them since 2001. The first game I went to, I had my little radio. I didn't enjoy it. Everybody else around me knew what was going on. I had a 25 to delay with my little
Jeez.
radio, and my best friends, they're sitting looking at me, you're not having fun. I'm like, no, I have no idea what's going on. When we score, I have no idea because I can't see what's going on the ice, and the delay is so awful. As I said, they've come up with this device. What I'm trying to lead into is when I go to the theater, for example, and they don't have a properly working device or the audio description isn't working, what can I do to be a better advocate for myself and others that use that same theater to say what's going on? How can we get this to improve? Or say a TV network. For example, I've noticed on CBS, they have some shows that have audio description and some shows that never have audio description, like FBI, FBI Most Wanted, FBI International. They never have audio description available. But as I mentioned earlier, they have it. There's a lot of TV shows that do have it on CBS, but then there's some that don't. And I don't understand why there's such a gap in between. What can we do as blind audiences to tell them, hey, we're out here. We would like to be able to enjoy these shows. Help us enjoy them.
I love this question. There's a growing awareness, and I believe that awareness is one of the keys. Being able to approach a local news affiliate and say, is this something that can be fed through the SAP channel, the Audio Description Project, adp.acb.org? And the American Council of the Blind has this audio description project, and they've got a news feed, I believe it's called, where you can get email updates of the different initiatives that they're putting together and also the work of audio description. Like this film does have audio description, and being able to show a theater, say, your show, this film does have audio description. It's listed here. And being able to use some of those guides, because in a sense, it's got to feel like reinventing the wheel. And let's take a quick pause and say blind people should not have to do this, that sighted people don't have to advocate to be able to go to a film and have that immersive experience, that this is that extra step. And I do see growth here, but I still want to acknowledge that this is that extra speed bump in the freeway that makes things, it shouldn't have to be, but I appreciate you asking. And for those who do feel like they have the space and the energy to be able to do this, I really strongly suggest going to adp.acb.org and seeing the opportunities that they have there. And also see what's happening on social media. I know Blue Sky is becoming prominent. There's LinkedIn for those who are on there. For those of you who are still using Facebook, there's an audio description discussion group that I founded along with one of my friends. It's got close to 3,000 members having incredibly lively conversations. And I know results are happening from those who are sharing their experiences with audio description. Those are just a handful of the many places, but I strongly feel like the shaming can, it's got its time and place, but I find that initially those can be really not as effective as intended. There is a way to share a message of saying, I want to watch your movie and I wasn't able to, that doesn't make it seem like, in a way that makes it extra high stakes. There's a way to share.
I know when I've had a great experience at our local theater, I will go out of my way and say thank you, or I'll call the manager afterwards and say, hey, by the way, this is Kevin, how you doing? And they know who I am. I can just say, hey, thank you, I enjoyed that movie today, I've been looking forward to seeing it, etc. They know they're going to hear from me if it doesn't work out. I try to be very proactive. But one thing I've noticed at a lot of the different movie giants, for example, 10, 15 years ago, Back Future Trilogy, they didn't have audio description back in the day. Now it does. The Indiana Jones movies, it didn't have description back in the days. Now it does. And I've noticed how they're going back and adding the audio description tracks to a lot of the older movies I grew up with that I enjoyed, that I can enjoy even more now because I can hear what's going on.
Nice.
And I love that.
Oh, really great example there.
Now, I'm just curious, and I could be wrong, and I don't want to topic too much, but one of the folks that I know, and I'm not sure if it was you or someone else, started a group on Facebook, and he ended up passing away a few years ago. A friend of mine that I knew in Atlanta by the name of Kevin.
Same name. Kevin's my buddy. When he passed away, it was heartbreaking. He and I started that Facebook group
too. I have a feeling that was who you were referring to, the small world.
Yeah. He's still dear to my heart.
You mentioned in your book that audio description isn't just about accessibility, it's about connection. Can you share a moment where you felt that deep connection between an audience and a great piece of audio description?
It's a great question. I think about one of the interviews I did a few years back when Hamilton came on Disney Plus. We interviewed an audio description writer who worked on the live stage production musical Hamlet. They weren't involved with the TV film. And one of my friends who adored Hamilton, who's an audio description audience, this is one of those 80 snobs that I referred to. I think she coined the phrase 80 snob. And the two of them talked about the film in the sense of what was happening visually, because as you can imagine, when there's a musical with pretty much nonstop rap from the beginning to end, there's not a lot that can be used in audio description without disrupting what's needing to be heard through the songs. I still remember this episode because there was a specific, and no spoilers for those who haven't seen it, so I'll keep this without going into the specifics, but there's a very impactful visual element within that film and within the story of Hamilton that there was no room for the audio description to share. And once the blind audience member recognized what was happening, they broke down in tears. It was this impactful, beautiful story element that was not included in the audio description track for a multitude of legitimate reasons. But there was this moment that had such an emotional punch. To be able to witness that, these are important aspects of storytelling because of that emotional connection that we're able to have. It was a visual experience provided to a blind individual. And so this is the work that we do. This is part of the accessibility. The discrimination against blind people of having that immersive experience is palpable. And when it's addressed, it does make a difference.
I've heard you say that the entertainment industry often treats audio description as an afterthought rather than an integral part of production. With your experience, what do you think it will take to change that mindset and get filmmakers and studios to prioritize high quality audio description?
There are studios and even streaming services that are prioritizing audio description. Apple TV Plus has audio description. You can be in any country and listen to multiple languages of audio description and closed captioning, that they have released the challenge that blind people have of crossing from one streaming service to another. It doesn't matter if you're in Canada. It doesn't matter if you're somewhere in Europe. It doesn't matter if you're in the States, that you will have that audio description track and it will follow. That's a big challenge with audio description not going from one place to another. There's also Netflix, which has publicly listed their requirements for audio description, that they have a standards list of all the things that are important to the way that audio description is happening. We're recording this episode very close to the SAG Awards that just happened, and they themselves have included audio description for all their screeners, digital screeners for the voting population. Close to 200,000 members of SAG-AFTRA, when they vote for the SAG Awards, are able to have access to audio description. And one of the benefits of that is that that requirement itself made one of the producers who wanted to get a SAG Award add audio description. And then they recognized, oh, wait, we're missing a market share. There's like a whole set of audiences that want access to our content. So let's provide it to them. So to answer your question about the afterthought, and I address this in my book, there's an interview from the ANA that I quote about, if you build a multi-story building, you don't wait for it to be built to add the elevator. It's hard to add an elevator after the building's built. It's part of the process. And when audio description is included in production, that inclusivity can help tie audio description to production so that no matter where it lands, whether it's Netflix or any other streaming services, that audio description can travel with the content. And also, the focus is making sure that the audio description is reflective of what the content is. So I really believe, and I mentioned this in the book, that one of the conclusions is professionalism, and another is including audio description in the production and the thousands of benefits. It's a win-win for so many different areas.
This question is probably going to bring things down a little bit or get a little bit dark, and I don't intend that, but is AI a factor or a threat in what you do in audio description? And what are your thoughts about the future of AI's impact on your own job security?
It's already happening, and I'd suggest this is not a conversation I'm afraid of. I went to CES, the Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas this year, 2025. AI was pretty much in every panel. What was unique, Kevin, was that this very AI-centric event, almost every panel talked about the human element and the importance of including the human element in this work, that AI has been traditionally seen as this all-or-nothing thing where a lot of voice actors are completely threatened by it, and then others are completely buying into it and replacing it with everything. There is a space. I work in audio description. I really enjoy working in it. There are pieces of content that have synthetic voice for the audio description, and there's places for it. And the place for it is, for example, I, as a voice talent, have no interest in reading somebody's schedule or reading their emails or their text correspondences or the weather. All of these examples I just listed are content that is information-based. It's give me the facts, who, what, where, when, why. When we start adding the storytelling element, that emotional nuance, that is where things get different. As AI grows in its ability to read context and to understand the emotional nuance, it'll get better. But this current synthetic voice that's being slapped on content for film and TV can be jarring. I believe it's called the uncanny valley, that kind of disconnect. So there's a space here where AI can help enhance. This exists right now. There's a company using AI for providing content for training videos or educational videos, for example, students, to be able to pause at a certain slideshow and have the synthetic voice answer questions about what's happening on screen. It could be a whiteboard that's got a lot of math problems, and there could be something that a particular student wants a specific answer to without having to listen to paragraphs of other information. There are spaces for it, and I believe that as we understand the ethical implications, the legal implications, and some of the use cases, as long as the human element remains a priority, and the human element is not only on the creation of audio description, but also the consumer side, the audience's perspective, there is a space for it. Obviously, as far as being replaced, there have been countless audio description tracks that have had synthetic voice. From what I understand, there's this sadly discriminatory position where blind people are put in, do you want more or do you want it good? As if that is a binary choice, as if you can only choose between is it good or can I have it? And that puts our audience in a place that no sighted audience has ever been put in. We're back to that discriminatory position that our blind audiences are put in. And that's going back to your point of advocacy, that if audiences do not like the synthetic voice, then speak up and say something about why that doesn't work and the reasons why it doesn't work. I believe that as more people understand audio description, there's going to be more voice talents doing this, particularly blind and low vision voice talents. Let's keep in mind that we are replacing opportunities for our own blind and low vision community to do this work.
I love that. Thank you for sharing your perspective on that with me. You've been involved in thousands of movies, TV shows, commercials, and other media. Would you please just share with us a few of your favorites from throughout the years? And if you're also willing, and I won't ask you if there are any projects or, say, TV series that you don't really look forward to doing, because that would let the cat out of the bag. But if there are any, say, movie franchises, TV series that you enjoy doing, that you look forward to getting the next episode, or if you're asked to come back for another season of it, would you share that with us?
Sure, I'm going to be a little more general because I think this is going to address something else. That consistency does make a difference, whether it's an anthology series like 07 or a TV series. There's a familiarity. If you could have watching a TV show where the lead character gets replaced every other episode, that would be pretty jarring unless it's part of the storyline. So there's a space for audio description consistency in this context. I have made it explicitly clear to all the facilities that I am available and always interested in working. It's outside of my ability to say if I'm going to be hired again or not. There are many decisions that go into it beyond what I want or even what the facility wants. There are things that are outside of our ability to make these choices. If there are occasions of a TV show where someone who used to be on a season is not anymore, it's not necessarily a conflict or something that happened behind the
Right.
scenes that was negative. It could just mean that it went to a different facility or the facility has some other obligations that are outside of the voice talent's ability to control. Can you bring me back with the question, please?
Asking you what would be some of your favorite experiences you've had, favorite shows that you've been a part of, favorite movies, TV shows, whatever the case may be, what have been some of your favorites throughout the years?
Thank you. Yeah. So, with that consistency, I love working on the same show throughout the year. I get to know these characters. I get to imagine, for example, a science fiction series that you start to really understand the world and become a part of it in a way that you can get the nuance and pick up on things that are really important in a way that someone outside of the experience might not understand. And I find that infinitely satisfying to be able to have those kind of secret, almost Easter eggy understandings that I can share with a wink or a nod with my voice with the audience to give them that extra awareness. I do find that the jobs that I really connect with, when the audio description script is so well done, when the mix is done well, when all the cylinders are firing, that I'm able to be in a state of flow. And that's to answer your question more globally. Anytime that I am in that flow of being able to be a part of the story and instantly be able to bring that script into the immersion of what the producers and directors are aiming for within the content, it's a beautiful dance that I'm really honored to be a part of.
Okay. Now I'm going to get really specific with you. Would you please share with us one of your fondest memories from being a part of either a TV show or a movie where you described a moment that has had a lasting effect on you?
I worked as a voice actor on a TV show outside of audio description. And a few months later, I voiced the audio description for that same show. And it felt really uniquely yummy and delicious to be able to have both.
Would you also share with us a funny or lighthearted moment, or even what the biz calls an outtake with us?
There was one script was directed in. So there was an engineer, there was a director. I think there was somebody else in the studio as well as myself. We had gone through probably 200 cues fairly efficiently with very few pickups. A pickup is when I make a mistake or there's a rewrite or something outside of my control that they have to do or something that needs to be fixed. But we had flown through this script. And I think there was like one or two more lines to do. And for whatever reason, I could not say two very common words back to back. I think it was something like the detective's winks, but for whatever reason, those words would not come out of my mouth. I had done my best. It was literally like I had tripped on a gap in the sidewalk and gone into the pit of hell, deep, far below. It was just impossible to recover. And it wasn't until I stopped, stepped out of the studio for less than 5 seconds, took a deep breath, and came in that I was able to say it. It was inexplicably how convoluted and a form of self-sabotage I have never experienced since. But boy, we still laugh about it. I don't understand what happened, but it happened.
Well, I'm here laughing because I'm thinking Roy had a loss for words and couldn't get a couple words out. That amazes me.
It happens. Like every voice actor has that kind of story, and these wires get crossed,
Oh,
and
definitely.
everyone's got their own way of fighting it. Sometimes it might not even be noticeable in a recording environment. In this case, it clearly was, but that's part of the instrument training. That's part of the coaching to be able to recognize, oh, this is happening, and there's a way to hack your own system or do a control command delete and restart just to find a way to shake out whatever is grinding the gears.
You're just thinking to yourself, cut.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the director's job. I can't necessarily ask for a break every time, but thankfully they recognized it.
If there is an actor or an actress that you would love to meet and possibly work with on a project, alive or deceased, who would it be and why?
That is such a great question. You know, there are times when an actor is able to bring life to a script that is indescribable. That is what I would look for. If I'm able to recognize that they're able to bring truth to the script in a way that is uniquely theirs, that's who I want to be a part of working with.
Okay. How has social media impacted what you do?
I've been on the wrong side of social media and I've been on the right side of social media, and it has had a tremendous impact. I believe there was an article recently where some very well-known celebrity was talking about follower count on social media. There's opportunities there, and I think there's some threats. With social media, one of the things that's really important is that back and forth, that there's able to be a conversation between the people working on films, whether that's the producer, director, or even the audio description team and the audiences that are being affected. To be able to have that back and forth, I think, is something uniquely social media that kind of gives a different kind of connection besides just experiencing the film and sending a letter or asking for an email address later. There's that exchange that's really special.
Was a father of three blind kids, much like myself, I have thought a lot about what kind of media I want them to grow up with, in addition to any of my future grandchildren. What do you hope the future of audio description looks like for the next generation of blind audiences? And how do we make sure that they get the same rich, immersive experiences that sighted audiences take for granted?
There's a few different answers to that. I'm going to start with one of the conclusions of the book, Professionalism, that when audio description is treated not as that afterthought that we had talked about, but as something that is part of the industry, the professionalism of it elevates it to be on par with the rest of the film or TV show. That the qual we've got quantity. That's obviously incredibly important, that we want as much audio description as possible, but without neglecting the quality of the audio description. So not just numbers, not just how much audio description, but how good and why that matters. In the future, I also see variables, for example, deaf-blind people being able to have access to the audio description scripts. When it comes to live theater, we talk about the touch tours or the intro to be able to get on board with what's happening. We had briefly talked about the enemy of time earlier in this conversation, to be able to find a way to hijack that ability. In the same way, we talked about the musical theater and being able to have access to those things that we just don't have time during the actual production. I see those variables, and this is a great application of AI, to be able to expand on some of those visuals in a way that we haven't been able to because of the way audio description is limited to those 90 minutes of a film. I love the idea of enhancing the audio description in a way that can toggle on or off. There might be certain blind people, and I'd be curious if your kids are like this or yourself, where you want more audio description or you might want less, and to be able to dial it in. These are applications that I believe are going to be coming if they're not already here. Multiple languages of audio description. I prefer facial expressions, or I prefer spectacle. I want to know what the sets look like, or I want to know what the camera angles look like. Each of these are applications of audio description that are being explored in ways that are really special and can make each individual's experience so much more personalized. And we haven't even talked about virtual reality, but we'll stop there.
I know my boys have even told me, like their mom did over the years, Dad, turn it off. That's just annoying. And I get it from their perspective. They're younger, they're more into just watching it. Me, I have to have it, and it just helps me enjoy it so much more. I've already taken enough of your time today, but I would love to ask you some personal questions just in the hopes of getting to know you a little bit better, if you can spare a few more minutes.
Sure.
If you were to have a walk-up song, such as like they do in baseball, for example, what song for you and your personality, what song would it be?
Oh, wow. I like this a lot. And thank you for the personal question. I don't
Okay.
think I could be locked into one song just because there's so many different experiences that I have during the day. Let me give you a song. There's a song by Kacey Musgraves called Oh, What a World. It's so wistful and hopeful. It touches my heart. I think that would be on the list for sure.
What do you enjoy doing for fun? What are your favorite hobbies besides audio description?
I do take my break from audio description. I love going for walks. I've got some travel coming up and spending time with friends that I don't get to see very often. I'm pretty simple when it comes to the pleasures of a lovely meal, even at a friend's house, to be able to laugh and joke around and have that luxury of just spending time together. It is agenda free and it's connecting. Recently had a beautiful time with a friend of mine that I've known for quite a while. She has moved out of state, and it's wonderful to reconnect with her and have all those memories and still be able to just pick up, even though we haven't necessarily talked for the last year and a half, and catch each other up and feel that exchange of friendly love between friends and how beautiful that is. I really do spending time with people who I care a lot about.
Okay. What is your favorite meal?
Chicken and waffles.
Do you have a go-to place that you get it from, or do you like homemade?
I love homemade. I learned how to make the McGriddle at home thanks to Trader Joe's items. So that's a home cooker that I really appreciate. There is such a thing as a home cooked McGriddle thanks to Trader Joe's.
Well, I might have to come over to your place for breakfast.
So good. And it's just like an easy bake oven. It's so much fun.
Where's your favorite vacation spot?
I'm going to describe it as mountainy and sunny and close to the beach. So that's pretty much all of Central California.
I love that. I'm a water child myself, so anytime I
Ah,
can be close to water and get in water, I'm in heaven.
nice.
That or a baseball game. So,
Haha, there you go.
out of all the films and TV shows you have been able to work on, which ones would be on your personal list or Mount Rushmore of movies and TV shows?
Oh, I'm going to pivot again. One where the audio description script is firing on all cylinders, that there's no weakest link, that the quality control is done by a blind professional, that the script writing has been edited and is just totally in sync with the picture. If it's me as a voice talent, great. If I'm producing it, great. It doesn't matter the kind of involvement, but just knowing that firing all cylinders, that's really important. I'm very agnostic with the specifics, but when that happens, that's what feels really good.
Okay, if we took our audio description from the mix and we were to ask you to give us two or three, maybe four of your all-time favorite movies or TV shows from throughout all of history, would you be able to give us some?
Somebody Somewhere on Max, Ted Lasso, and there's also an animated short called The Boy, the Mole, the Fox, and the Horse, which is one of the kindest, most beautiful experiences I've had in film recently. I'm going to go with Princess Bride because it's stereotypical and it's amazing, and I can watch it. There's also Heartstopper, which is on Netflix, which I think is really tender and beautiful. Let's give Schitt's Creek a shout out, the TV show. And I think there's another movie I recently saw that I really was enamored with, and I don't remember the title off the top of my head. How's that? I'm actually given some specifics.
That works. Well, since my audience is primarily music focused, do you enjoy listening to music? And if so, what genres are in your personal playlist?
Oh, I am a barefoot acoustic playlist dude. And I also go with chill sounds. There's some dance stuff that I like to play with. If I give you some specific names, like Leon Bridges, I'm a big fan of. I like Neil Young. I like
Okay.
Bob Dylan sometimes. There's Mazzy Star is always working for me. And if I'm in the mood, Smashing Pumpkins, but that's not as often.
What is one lesson you have learned that has helped to mold you into the person you are today?
It's definitely going to be around the realm of self-awareness, but I'm going to take it to the next level and say the Serenity Prayer.
You and I have both pursued our passions, radio for me and voice and accessibility for you, despite our challenges. What advice would you give to blind and visually impaired folks who want to break into audio description, whether as performers, writers, or advocates?
Now, this is a loaded answer. Start doing it. That there are opportunities right now to connect with others, whether it's on the audio description discussion group on Facebook to say, hey, I'm looking to develop my writing, quality control, or voiceover. Can I work with someone? And start exploring what you can do right now. I feel like this is coming from my own mistaken understanding of how the industry works. I waited so many years to do auditions. I'm still studying to this day that I have coaches, I have mentors, I have people that are showing me how to continue to improve my craft. Those are things that can happen instantly, right now, to find those people that someone connects with in a way that makes sense, where the actual relationship feels good. Instead of feeling like you're breaking in, to start doing the work. I know several people that have banded together and started creating their own advocacy work or their own audio description team. I facilitate workouts for voiceover performers. There's a lot of different ways to step in and explore what matters and start doing it. And it's not necessarily going to be airing on the Super Bowl or at your local Cineplex. It could be your neighbor making a short film for their elementary school project, and it's, hey, can I work with you and add audio description to it? Just to have the experience is so important to be able to experience what it is. And then on the advocacy side, find ways to connect with others that are doing it and start seeing what comes up. There's a lot of assumptions that we have, passions, whether it's, like you said, radio. I'd be curious if you agree that pursuing radio could be as simple as recording something on your phone and listening back. Or putting a few mixes together on a playlist and sharing it with someone and seeing what they say.
Well, absolutely. It's funny because you talked about this at the beginning when you said you sat down with someone in a studio. I had the same experience in high
Really?
school. Yeah, I had a job shadowing experience with Bo Matthews at WIL FM 92 back in St. Louis when I was in high school. Back then, my dream job was to be a radio DJ and to go into radio. Fortunately, with voice and throat issues, it just didn't work out for me at the time. So, when I ended up having to leave my full-time employment back in the 2000s because I couldn't see well enough to keep doing the job I had, I decided I wanted to get into internet radio. And now, 14 years later, that's what I'm doing. And I enjoy it. I love it. And I'm not the greatest. And my friends will tell you I'm always putting myself down or saying that I'm not that good, but I love what I do. And it comes through my voice and in my interviews. People can hear the passion in my voice, the music I enjoy, and the folks I get to talk to, and the friendships I make from it. I think that's the best part of the whole process. So I'm grateful for what I'm able to do.
I hear that. And the two things that stand out for me is that something that happened decades ago, you still remember the name of the radio and you still remember the name of the person. That the impact that had on you. And also, it's internet radio probably didn't exist in 1992. There's no way that you could have predicted that you'd be doing this kind of thing on the regular now.
My final, and I do have another part to that question of on the flip side of the coin, not talking from the visual aspect, but what advice would you give to someone that wants to get into voice acting or do audio description, but maybe they're a sighted individual, but they are just looking to you for advice since you're such an awesome expert and you've built this great reputation in what you do?
There are so many different approaches to voiceover. I'm going to name another experience that I wish I would have known when I was starting out is to focus. That if I was really specific about what I wanted to get into within voiceover, if I knew I was going to get into promo, if I knew I wanted to get into audio description, if I knew that these specifics, but I was just so excited about voiceover, I'm like, I'll do anything. And that I'll do anything really wasn't bringing the multitude of opportunities, it wasn't casting a wide net. It was actually hurting me. Had I been laser focused on one aspect of voiceover and stuck with that, maybe after a handful of months, oh, I don't like this at all. I want to do this now. That's fine too. But I really believe that laser focus can help reduce burnout, can really help develop a craft in a way that can enhance someone. So, if there is something very specific within the world of audio description, pursue that and start searching online. YouTube is a great resource. There's a handful of voiceover coaching opportunities. There's all sorts of ways to start taking those steps. When someone comes from a place of curiosity, that can really help expand and bring. I'm sure you experienced the same thing, that your passion for radio has probably exploded since that first experience.
My final question is, do you have any upcoming projects, or are you currently working on anything, say a TV show, movie, that you are able to share with us and talk about?
There's going to be some major projects coming out that I cannot right now, and I'm so excited. Kevin, can we please follow up within the next month or two? I produced audio description for a film called Possibilities, and it's produced by AFB, and there is a screening at the Garden State Film Festival, and it's already won a lot of awards. It's a documentary film about blind people. It is with open audio description. The audio description is baked in. You can't turn it off. The point is, it's part of the story. And there's a trailer online. If you go to YouTube, FB Possibilities, or even go to afb.org and search for Possibilities, it'll give some more stories of that. So that's the end of March. I'm not sure when this is going to be released, but I'm going to be very excited to be in New Jersey. A majority of the audio description team will be there in person. I'm very excited for all the guide dogs and the clacking. It's going to be a great time.
One follow-up question to that, if you don't mind, and I'm just curious because you helped me think of this, but obviously I'm in the land of the Sundance Film Festival, and it was here forever. And of course, it took a little bit of a break or hiatus, but have you ever done any audio description for any of those movies?
Yes. And I can't name any off the top of my head. I wish I could remember the names, but yes, I have. Big fan.
I was just curious. I know we have a mutual friend between us, Everett, and
Yay, Everett, right?
I'm sure he has seen quite a few of them, but I'd have to ask him if he remembers any that you were a part of.
It's
So.
great what they're doing with that festival and how accessible it is. They keep on developing new ways to make it even better each year. It's
Well,
remarkable.
absolutely. I'd like to give you the final word. Please give us your website, your social media, but most importantly, how we can also get your new book.
Thank you. Let's start with the new book, which is How to Reach Me Online, roysamuelson.com/book. So that's roysamuelson.com/book. And there's the audiobook version, there's the print version, there's a digital version. And most importantly, I believe it's on Bard now for blind people that have access to Bard and Audible. Yeah. So it's Audible. There's also, I believe it's on Spotify. So there's a bunch of different places. The main ones are listed on there. It also gives a little more examples of why the book was written and some more about pages. The website's in the midst of being updated. Within the next few weeks, it'll be even more expanded. But right now, it's got a lot of content. I'm on LinkedIn, Roy Samuelson, and occasionally posting on some of the social media, but I haven't really settled in on anything except for LinkedIn at this point.
Again, I'd like to thank you for your time today. We wish you continued success, but most importantly, nothing but happiness.
Oh, thank you. I feel that blessing and right back to you. Thanks so much, Kevin. Real pleasure to be on the DJ Troublemaker podcast. Thanks so much for reaching out.